for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. By age 65, most people will be diagnosed with two age-related diseases. Scientists at the Mayo Clinic recently found that removing old cells in mice prevented them from developing cataracts and muscle loss. And at UCLA, researchers activated a gene in the stomach of a fruit fly that extended its life by 50%. Joining me here in the studio to talk about how new developments in aging research might apply to humans, Felipe Sierra of the National Institutes of Health, joining us from a studio in Rochester, Minnesota, Jan van Dersen of the Mayo Clinic. This is such exciting research. I hope you'll join us with your questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. And good morning to you, Felipe Sierra.
Good morning, Diane.
And good morning to you, Jan van Dersen.
Good morning.
Felipe Sierra, this is not brand new research, is it?
The research that was done at the Mayo Clinic is, of course, brand new, just published. But the field of cell senescence has been around with us for 50 years.
Explain senescence.
Yeah, so cell senescence is one of possible fates of cells when cells that normally can divide, when for one reason or another, they cannot do so anymore. And usually this is considered, this was described originally 50 years ago by Len Hayflick, and was suggested that it was related to human aging, but we have not known that as a fact until now. Now, what has been pretty much agreed by scientific community recently is that senescence is one of two mechanisms that we have at the cell level to fight cancer. When a cell tries to divide forever, as in a cancer, you either activate its own cell death mechanism, it gets killed, or it turns into a senescent cell, which cannot divide anymore, therefore it does not produce a cancer. However, recent research has also shown that these senescent cells do not just sit there, but they secrete a lot of bad things, basically, which could or could not be one of the causes of aging. And that's where we were until the recent research.
Now, Jan van Dersen, tell us about your recent study on senescent cells in mice.
Yes. What we did is, so we knew about senescent cells accumulating in tissues and organs of mice and humans with age. And the question we asked, are these cells just innocent bystanders, or are they actually doing bad things, such as driving the dysfunction of these tissues and organs, dysfunction that's typical associated with age-associated disorders. And so we designed an animal model where we could induce the killing of senescent cells, the clearance, so to speak. And what we found was that age-related diseases that were occurring in our mouse model, such as sarcopenia, which is a loss of muscle mass and muscle strength, which is very common in the elderly and associated with their loss of independence, the formation of eye defects, such as cataracts, and the loss of functional fat. And so what we found that was that the accumulation of senescent cells in skeletal muscle, fat, and in the eye actually drives the age-related pathologies, and that clearing these cells is not only delaying the onset of those disorders, but can actually, or it's not preventing those, but it's delaying the onset of these diseases.
Okay, so let me just recap here a little bit. What you're saying is that by virtue of the elimination of these senescent cells in mice, what you were able to do was to delay the onset of diseases in their tissues. Is that accurate?
Yes, and I think an important finding of the study is also that we found no overt negative side effects of clearing these cells. So one big question is always in this type of research, you know, these cells accumulate for a reason. Is that reason, is there a benefit to their accumulation? And as far as we can tell, the removal of the cells seems to be safe in our animal model. So there's no negative consequences. The only positive consequences were noticed, but I would like to stress that we did not see a reversal of aging. It's not like we turned a old mouse into a young mouse.
So we're not talking about the fountain of youth, at least yet. Is that correct?
I think that's correct. Aging is a very complex process, and all cells in our body essentially over time experience wear and tear, and on top of that, they experience these senescent cells that make the neighborhood in which cells live not so livable, make it more difficult to do well in. So just by taking away these senescent cells, you basically improve the neighborhood in which cells live, but you're not taking away the damage that these cells have encountered themselves.
But, Felipe, there's a question here. If these senescent cells are harmful, why haven't human beings evolved in a way to simply get rid of them?
Well, there's two aspects to that. One possibility, of course, is that the importance of fighting cancer for a multicellular organism like ourselves, the way we can grow to the size that we have and we can live for so long, is precisely given by the ability of some of our cells to divide forever, and that has the risk of cancer. So we evolved these mechanisms to get rid of the cancer, and maybe that's a priority. Evolution cannot prevent us from developing a mechanism that keeps us healthy when we're young, even if it has a deleterious effect when we're old, because evolution doesn't care about us when we're old.
So, but when we are young, do these senescent cells behave differently from what happens as we age?
Not that we know. As far as we know, they behave the same, but they don't accumulate much because there's a system to get rid of them. They don't die like the other cells that the other mechanism for fighting cancer. They do not die. However, the immune system clears them. So the senescent cells secrete several compounds that call the immune system to tell them, hey, I need to be removed. Okay? Now, what happens with age is that our immune system starts failing too. So the cells are not removed as efficiently as when we were young. And that's when the problems start accumulating.
So from these kinds of experiments with mice, can we extrapolate and begin to think that the same process could be at work in human beings?
Well, the mechanism, as Young probably could, might be able to explain, because it's quite fancy genetics that they did to be able to do this in mice. So a similar way in humans will not be possible. However, the finding that the cells indeed have the effects that they have makes us think that it's something that we should focus on. We should try to get rid of the cells. Before these results, we weren't sure that the senescent cells were indeed bad. Now we know that they are bad, and therefore there's a reason to focus either on eliminating the cells, at least eliminating their secretions, or at least neutralize them one way or another. It's worth doing now, and I think that's where the research will go in the near future.
And I would certainly think, Jan van Deursen, that drug companies would be awfully interested in your work.
Yeah, that's the case. And so we have received interest from several companies. And I'm actually quite optimistic that... So we used a genetic trick to kill cells. And now the next step is to find a way to clear them as in humans or in mice.
All right. And we're going to take a short break here. You're listening to Jan van Deursen at the Mayo Clinic and Felipe Sierra at NIH. And we're talking about some very exciting new research going on currently in mice and elsewhere. With me here in the studio is Felipe Sierra. He's director of the Division of Aging Biology at the National Institute on Aging at NIH, joining us from a studio at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, is Jan van Deursen. He's professor of molecular biology and biochemistry at the Mayo Clinic. They are both extremely excited about their work. Now joining us from a studio at UCLA is David Walker. He's assistant professor of integrated biology and physiology at the University of California, Los Angeles. Good morning, Dr. Walker. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you. Tell me about your fruit fly study.
So we're interested in some of the same basic questions. We're very interested to try and understand the basic biology of aging. And in this recent study, what we did was we identified a gene. The gene's called PGC1. And we made a discovery, which is that if we upregulate, if we boost the activity of that gene in the intestine of the fly, that's able to make the whole animal live significantly longer, as much as 50% in certain cases. And really, at the same time, we see that this, as well as extending the lifespan of the animal, we actually slow many of the hallmarks of aging within the fly intestine.
So how long does the normal fruit fly live?
Normal healthy flies live between 6 and 8 weeks, around just under 2 months.
So I gather that would make them a good subject for your study.
Exactly.
And when do they begin showing the signs of aging?
Well, just like people, the major features of aging are recapitulated in the fly and when they reach around middle age. So after about 4 weeks or a month, the flies begin to, their reproductive capacity declines, they become much less active, they lose the ability to fly and climb, and they even lose cognitive abilities. They don't remember quite so well as when they're young.
So it sounds as though you're saying that there is something very, very important about the digestive tract as it relates to aging. Do you believe that that also applies to human beings?
Well, that's one of the major findings of our study with respect to the fly, that yes, that we find that we can slow aging at the organismal level by slowing aging of the intestine. And the study was exclusively done in the fly, but it does raise questions about intestinal aging in other species, mammals, including people, of course. The intestine is a vital organ, of course, for nutrient uptake, for the getting energy from food. But it's also a very important barrier that protects us from pathogens and toxins in the environment. So, in some ways it makes a lot of sense that maintaining healthy intestinal function as we age is very important for our health.
Dr. Sierra.
Yeah, I would like to add that the intestine in the fly has one particular characteristic that is unique in the fly but is not unique in us. The intestine is the only organ in the fly that has stem cells that can actually proliferate. So maybe in us, and I don't disagree with David on the importance of the intestine in terms of absorption and being a barrier to chemicals, but in humans, we have other tissues that share this thing with the intestine of the fly, which is we have stem cells, we have a regenerative capacity. And maybe what he's observing in the intestine being unique to the intestine, in mammals, it could be unique to all regenerative tissues, including those that eventually could show cell senescence and things like that.
Interesting. And Jan Vendersen, what's your reaction to the fruit fly study by Professor Walker? Could it be tried with mice?
Actually, it has been done in mice. There's a study by one researcher I know involved in, Bruce Spiegelman, where they overexpressed this gene, the PGC1-alpha, in skeletal muscle. And that study shows that the mice lived longer as well. So I think that this concern that there might be some specific thing about flies that would make this gene work with regard to longevity, I think it has already been kind of shown in mice that it works even when expressed in a different tissue. And Dr. Walker, correct me if I'm wrong on this mouse study.
I'm aware of that study from Dr. Spiegelman's lab. Yeah, they also showed, I believe, that it delayed the onset of sarcopenia in those animals. And this same gene has
what
been
what is sarcopenia?
Sarcopenia is the loss of muscle tissue as a function of age. So this gene has also been implicated in a number of other age-related neurodegenerative diseases such as Parkinson's disease and even Huntington's disease. So it does seem to be a potential target to intervene in aging.
Dr. Sierra, I've read that you refer to this study of cells and essence as the holy grail of the aging field.
No. Not the holy grail of the aging field, the holy grail of the senescent cell field.
All right, I'll take that.
Basically, there are several lines of research. As Dr. Van Dersen said, removing the senescent cells did not abolish aging. We're not going to become immortal.
Right.
There are many aspects to aging, and cell senescence is one of them. Now, when I talk about the holy grail in that sense, it's because the cells have been known for 50 years, and what has been at the center of everybody's attention is, are they really important? There's not many of them. They don't accumulate to large numbers. So the question of whether they have a physiological role in the decay of tissue function has always been in the back of people's mind. Yes, they are there. Okay, fine. Are they bad? Or maybe they are good. We don't know. As you asked me earlier, why do we still have them? Maybe they are good. And that question actually has not been answered, and it will not be answered for a while. Maybe there are some circumstances that we have not tested yet in which the senescent cells will be important. For example, because they secrete these things that call the immune system into action, maybe they play a role in those circumstances. We just don't know. But the Holy Grail comment was because it was so important to determine what happens if we get rid of them or if we increase them. And that's what has been done with this study.
We have a question from Elizabeth in Boston. To what extent is research on mitochondrial mechanisms related to this research? She says, I have two sons with mitochondrial disease.
Okay, mitochondria has been one of the other big fields that we have been studying in aging. The free radical hypothesis, which is the one that everybody cites, free radicals are bad for you. Okay, well, there's a lot of questions there, but the research on mitochondria has been very, very important, and things like PGC1 alpha, for example, has been shown to be activated by resveratrol, which is another compound that people know about that helps with aging physiology. So there's a lot to be said about how important mitochondria are. After all, they are the ones that produce all the energy that we use, or most of the energy that we use. So defects in mitochondria can have very severe consequences, as unfortunately happens in these mitochondrial diseases. With aging, the defects are not as dramatic, but nevertheless, there's a decay in their functioning, and that plays a role.
Dr. Walker, what about calorie restriction? How do you think it plays a role in the aging process?
Well, that's a very interesting question, very appropriate to our study. So both the role of mitochondria and also dietary or caloric restriction were an inspiration behind our study. So as Felipe mentioned, it's known that mitochondria decay as a function of age. And it's also been known for a long time that dietary restriction can extend lifespan. We don't really know the mechanism, but one of the physiological correlates of dietary restriction is actually boosting mitochondrial activity. And that's exactly the same physiological function that PGC1 exerts. So one of the things we were interested to do was to see, what if we boost mitochondrial activity via PGC1 without changing the diet of the flies? Would that have the same life-extending effect as diet restriction? And as we published, it does indeed, when we target PGC1 to the digestive tract of the fly. So these things are all, mitochondria and diet restriction, they're all related.
And to you, Jan van Dersen, are senescent cells related to the causes of Alzheimer's disease?
It's unclear right now. Our model that we used, our mouse model that we used, did not have Alzheimer-like defects. One of the studies that is currently ongoing in the lab, performed by Dr. Dan Baker, is to specifically look at the effect of senescent cell clearance on Alzheimer's disease. There is a mouse model for Alzheimer's disease, and we're setting up the clearance of senescent cells. It's known that there is an inflammatory component to Alzheimer's disease, which might be caused by or influenced by senescent cells. So that's a very good question. Can the clearance of senescent cells also improve the function of the brain and the central nervous system? And unfortunately, our model did not, we were unable to draw any conclusions on the existing model, but that's currently ongoing.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We have a great many callers. I do want to open the phones. First, let's go to Phoenix, Arizona, and Phyllis. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
This is a fascinating program for me because I am extremely elderly and a stroke survivor. And I'm wondering if they are doing any research into the brain cell that has been killed by strokes, if there is any hope for regenerating brain cells.
Dr. Sierra.
Well, once a neuron is killed, unfortunately, there is no way of regenerating that neuron that we know of. Maybe in the future we will find, but right now, no. There is a lot of research on stroke. There's an institute, NINDS, which funds most of the research on stroke. But like all these age-related diseases, we feel that there is a commonality to all of them, that the aging processes are what's behind all of this. So in terms of treatments or cures, we don't have much in hand now. And to tell you the truth, I'm not that familiar with what the NINDS funds. So I don't know if anything is on the way.
But let me ask David Walker, this notion of growing older, but growing older in a healthier way is really what all this research is about. Am I correct there?
Yeah, that's correct. I guess the approach is, instead of targeting the individual diseases of old age and one by one, what we try and do is focus on the underlying aging process itself, because as we're all saying, that's the number one risk factor for all these disorders. And if we could find a way to slow that underlying aging process, then we would improve the overall health of the aging population rather than target the individual diseases. And I think that would have a huge impact on stroke, but also on Alzheimer's disease, cancer, cardiovascular diseases, all these diseases.
And what about other countries? Are they doing similar research? Are they ahead of us? What about that, Dr. Sierra?
Other countries are doing similar research. I was recently at a meeting in the Netherlands. Actually, Dr. Van Dersen was there too. They are doing very similar types of research. Different countries, of course, have different capabilities in terms of money. Some countries are going up, some are going down in terms of their funding for research in general. So the United States, of course, has been a workforce in research for many, many years, and we continue to be.
Do you think, given the importance of what we're seeing both here in the digestive tract with fruit flies and senescent cells, that perhaps we're focusing too much on the heart and the brain in the research that is being done here in this country, Dr. Sierra?
Well, I agree with what was said, that aging is the major risk factor for all of these diseases, and I think funding for that is a priority, but I'm not going to comment on how funding is distributed.
I understand that. I'm just wondering about people's focus, though, and whether you'll see in the coming months and years greater focus in this direction.
Yes, we are seeing a greater focus on aging in general. However, researchers being what they are, they tend to go wherever they think is most interesting, and many of them have reason to go into cardiovascular, into Alzheimer's, or whatever.
Felipe Sierra of the National Institute on Aging at NIH. Short break and more of your calls when we come back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By American Jewish World Service, pursuing global justice through grassroots change at ajws.org. And by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness, on the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, we hear Francis Ford Coppola on stage at the Toronto Film Festival telling stories behind his films, like when actors from The Godfather first met at an Italian dinner party he threw. Marlon Brando was at the table's head.
To his right was Pacino, you know, who was trying to impress Brando with how silent and intense he could be. And
join us.
Welcome back. As we talk about new research that looks into preventing disease from developing as we age, let's go right back to the phones to Deep Gap, North Carolina. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
This is my first time. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really enjoy your show.
I'm so glad. Thank you.
Anyway, my comment is that I've been aware of ways of cleaning out senescent cells, you know, from your body, you know, for many years, and I mean, you know, there have been methods, you know, for clearing the body out, you know, for thousands of years, you know, various kinds, you know, fasting, various kinds of diets. So there are many different ways of doing this already, and I'm just kind of curious as to, now I think the genetic research is extremely interesting, but I would also be interested to see how that would work, you know, along with these other more traditional ways of clearing out the body.
David Walker.
Well, this question may be Jan could perhaps answer this better than I, since it comments on his study. But yeah, the comment on the diet, yes, we've known for a long time that restricting dietary intake without malnutrition can extend our lifespan, but the mechanism underlying that we don't know. And I think that's what a lot of us in the basic biology of aging are trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So Felipe mentioned that one way of getting rid of senescent cells is via the immune system. So in essence, perhaps activities that boost the immune system could help keep your senescent cell levels down. For instance, there is one interesting study that has linked the clearance of senescent cells, or at least the prevention of accumulation, to exercise.
To exercise, healthy eating, I would think probably not smoking.
Yes. So I think we don't know, or without having a drug that can clear these cells, it seems like common sense that a healthy lifestyle will prevent the accumulation and perhaps promote the clearance of cells through natural ways. And I think the caller is absolutely right. But I don't think, apart from the study on exercise, I'm not aware of other lifestyles that are proof of other lifestyles that could help keep the senescent cell levels down.
But Dr. Van Dersen, is that where this might be headed toward, for example, the development of some drug therapy that could rid the body of senescent cells?
Yeah, I think that's a very promising line of research. I think that all the research that has been done on the targeted killing of cancer cells, so those are the targeted therapies, find a drug that kills specifically a kind or certain types of cancer cells and leave the normal cells, the healthy cells in our body, unattached. That research has been going on for several years now, and I think the clearance of senescent cell approaches can really benefit from that research. And I think that clearance of senescent cells might actually be a lot easier than killing cancer cells, because senescent cells cannot divide and senescent cells cannot escape the drug as easy as cancer cells do. That's the major problem with the targeted drug therapies, is that the cancer cells mutate and find a way around the drug. And I think because senescent cells don't have the ability to proliferate, I think they will be easy targets. And personally, I'm very optimistic that there will be, in maybe in addition to some lifestyle changes, that there might be specific drugs being developed over the recent years that can actually attack these cells.
Help me to understand what happens during, for example, radiation as a cancer therapy, and what that does to both senescent cells and cancer cells.
So the irradiation and chemo basically introduces DNA and protein damage. And cancer cells are somewhat more sensitive to that and die more readily after experience chemo or radiation. But normal cells also will experience damage. And normal cells, as a result of that, could go into senescence. Now that we know that senescent cells do bad things, that's maybe why chemo and irradiation treatments are associated with accelerated aging. And so perhaps in the future, if you find a way to get rid of senescent cells, maybe that would also benefit people that receive cancer treatment.
Interesting. Dr. Walker, do you want to comment?
No, I would agree with those statements and sentiments. Yeah.
All right, Dan, let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Surely.
My question is, I've been sort of reading about the longevity diet, about calorie restriction, optimal nutrition, and the whole idea is still sort of vague for me, so I don't know if you've already touched on this or not, but I was just wondering if maybe you guys could talk about it just a little bit more, and let's see, I had another question. What do you guys think about a vegan diet as a way to prolong life, and as opposed to like eating meat or eating dairy, things like that?
Well, you understand that these are not dietitians, but Dr. Sierra, you might want to comment.
Yeah, so there's always this thing about dietary restriction. It increases lifespan and
right.
increases health. Those are studies for the most part done in animals. We don't know whether there's other effects in humans. There are some.
And how severe are those dietary restrictions?
Quite. Depending on the species, on different conditions, they are from a weaning of a mouse, in other words, from about 21 days of age until they die, a 40% restriction. So that's a quite, it's not just your regular diet. That's a very, and yet with no malnutrition. Now, the thing that's not that clear is that your genetic background affects how dietary restriction will work. So we don't know in humans, which have a varied genetic background, a heterogeneous genetic background, some of us might be helped by dietary restriction and some of us might not. Now, if you have a heavy BMI of 27 or 28, there's no question that diet will help you.
Mm-hmm.
But this extreme diet that we subject the animals to, I see them primarily as a research tool to identify the mechanisms so that, like we have been doing with other things, once you identify the mechanism, the idea is to develop mimetics of the diet restriction, where you don't restrict yourself, but you take something that makes the body think that you are
I see. Jan Vendersen, I'd be interested in your work with centenarians.
Well, we're not doing work with centenarians, but what we are learning from centenarians is that they typically have a very long health span, which is basically the period in one's time that a person is free of major chronic diseases. The health span in centenarians is very long, and one interesting goal, I think, or more recent goal, is not to increase lifespan so much as health span, to improve the quality of life. We're trying to learn from centenarians why their health span is so good, and try to mimic that so that ordinary folks like my family might be able to improve the quality of their health in later years. And that also has, of course, an important socioeconomic advantage. If you can compress the period in one's life that one is dependent on doctors, hospitals, and maybe nursing homes, that would decrease the healthcare cost quite dramatically. And we all know that this is very important.
But is there something different that you've seen about centenarians? Do they live differently? Do they eat differently? Do they sleep differently?
Well, this is not my area of expertise, but what we're always joking about at meetings is that these people do not particularly live healthy lifestyles. They don't necessarily watch their diet. Some of them even smoke. It seems like their genetic composition is such that they're resistant to a lot of age-related diseases or deterioration. And we say genetic because I say genetic because usually siblings have also of these centenarians have long life expectancy. So there is definitely a genetic component to all this.
And that brings me full circle. I mean, if Dr. Sierra, you're born with a genetic makeup that is, no matter what you do, if you drink, if you smoke, if you don't exercise, if you overeat, and you're going to live beyond 100, then how does that affect your thinking about all this research?
Well, certainly that is true. If I knew that I had the genetic... I would misbehave. However, I don't know. So, and bottom line is that these centenarians are really extreme cases. There are very few of them. So the chances that my genetic components are so that I will become a centenarian are extremely, extremely I have
low.
A low chance.
Low.
So I would rather take care of myself, exercise, eat good, and so on, because I can't count on being like these ones that have been studied. Now, one thing that I would like to add when we talk about centenarians, and Jan talked on the touched a little bit on the cost to society. So I recently heard, and I have not seen the data, but I was told by somebody who works with the centenarians, one thing that we do know is that most of the cost of healthcare occurs during the last 5 years of your life, but it takes a third of the cost when you die at 100 than it takes when you die at 80. When you die at 80, you have a slow decay that requires a lot of health services, and it's very expensive. When you die at 100, indeed, your health span has been increased to a point that you don't even go to the doctor when you're 80. You start going about a year before you die, and then you die very fast. So the cost of the last 5 years is only a third of what would be otherwise.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let's go to Salt Lake City, Utah. Good morning, Tom.
Hi. I have two questions. So I was wondering what the difference is between health span and lifespan, but I guess that's partially answered.
Yeah.
But also what point in a human life cycle these problems seem to really develop? And I guess, you know, to be frank, like, you know, if I'm in my 20s now, you know, and what's kind of the time frame that we're looking at in terms of, like, an actual treatment to remove these senescent cells so that, you know, practically speaking, we might be able to actually, you know, enjoy this extended health span.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Dr. Sierra.
Well, for one thing, we cannot remove the senescent cells yet, so you don't have to worry yourself about that. But in terms of when you can start a treatment to prevent aging, it's unlikely that people will, even that the FDA will approve, or that people will start a treatment when you're healthy to make you live longer if you are only 20. This becomes more relevant when you are getting old. So you start thinking about it, and it starts bothering you. And in that sense, for example, the NIA funded a study on that showed that rapamycin extends the lifespan and the health span, as far as we can tell.
Rapamycin. What is that?
It's a compound that was found in the island of Rapa Nui, and that's why it's called rapamycin. Rapa Nui is what in here is called called Easter Island. Okay, so this compound has been used as an immunosuppressant for transplant patients.
I see.
But it acts, the molecular way in which it works at the cell level is very well known. And studies in flies, in worms, had shown that modifying the activity of that pathway did lead to longer life. So it was tried in mice, and it did. It made the mice live longer. Okay? Now, the interesting thing is that for several reasons. The treatment of the mice started when the mice were almost 2 years old, which has been extrapolated. I don't know how correct this is, but would be equivalent to a 60-year-old person.
Huh.
Then we're talking about something that, as a 60-year-old, you start thinking about what I'm going to do when I get old.
Felipe Sierra. He's at the National Institute on Aging, Jan van Deursen, Professor of Molecular Biology and Biochemistry at the Mayo Clinic, and David Walker. He's Assistant Professor of Integrative Biology and Physiology at the University of California, Los Angeles. Fascinating work, gentlemen. I will be interested as I grow older hearing all about it. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and